Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to No Free Rides. I'm your host, Tiffany Carlson. Today is February 28th, 2013, and this disability podcast is brought to you by EasyStand, the makers of the finest standing frames around. So, hey, everybody, thanks so much for tuning in. We are on the tail end of winter. This is our show for the month of February. And, you know, which means, you know, I don't know where you're at. Maybe you're not experiencing cooler weather, but where I'm at, you know, cabin fever is not only has it set in, it's been there for a while. And, you know, I've been dreaming of going someplace warmer, of surfing, adapted surfing. And so I thought it'd be fun to have Scott Rains on the show with us today. And he is an inclusive travel expert, and he's been hired by governments and tourism businesses all around the world to show them how they can offer more inclusive accessibility for disabled travelers that come to their businesses or countries. And so he's been hired by South Africa and lots of other places. So he is an expert on this subject. So he's really, really, really smart. And I'm so excited that he decided to grace us with his awesome presence. So stay tuned for my interview with this amazing guy who's also a former peace activist and an all-around just really sweet person in a few minutes. But first, I don't have a lot to talk about this month in particular, other than, you know, bitching about my wheelchair and all that. But I'm just really excited to bring, Scott on the show. But I first wanted to just put a call out there to everybody and see if you might have been experiencing the same situation. Have you experienced sudden arm or muscle weakness in your arm from maybe moving your arms? And you can't move your legs like me, so you're using your upper body for everything. And have you been doing this for many years? And because of this, as a result, have you started to experience increased weakness, soreness in your muscles and/or nerves in your arms? Has this been something you've been going through? For me, it's been something I've been having to go through. It all started about 6 months ago from a road trip. I hurt my wrist from holding it on my steering wheel for too long, and my wrist has been tired ever since then. It's never gotten better, and now the weakness is going up my arm, up to my tendon, up to my shoulder, and it's really, really obviously disconcerting. So I've been going to therapists and stuff trying to get an answer, and I haven't been able to get an answer yet. So what I'm doing is using my podcast right now as a way to communicate with all of you fine people out there in the world to see if maybe you've experienced this and what are your ideas. I've had some really great feedback from people from recommended Aikido wrist stretches that help with the wrist, to maybe getting an EMG of my arm, which I'm still going to do, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot of things out there, but I was wondering, isn't there a term for this? You know, you think there would be, right? So I'm just putting this out there into the internet world. If you have experienced something like this, maybe you could give me your feedback or your idea on what you think I might be experiencing. Please email me at tiffany@beautyability.com. And, you know, I'd love to talk to you, and maybe we could have you on the show and talk about it as well. It's something that's been scaring me. And I think, you know, maybe my story can help other people as well. Because from what I've found, Googling my condition, a lot of other people in my situation are experiencing similar things and don't know what's causing it. So we need to get to the root of this, don't we? So any ideas, please get in touch with me. So, and you know, having and keeping your arm strength is huge when you have a disability like mine. And, you know, Scott Rains knows this well. You know, he's been a paraplegic since the early 70s, and he travels. Sometimes he travels alone. Sometimes he travels with people. But especially when you're not at home, having as strong an upper body as possible is, of course, going to be an important thing. And you need to be strong when you travel. And that's why, you know, Scott can tell us all about this and more in a few minutes. So, you know, stay tuned. He will be joining us less than 20 seconds. So stay tuned and he will be right up. All right, everybody. Hey, so as I mentioned at the top of the show, we are joined today by Dr. Scott Rains, and he is an inclusive travel expert. And he was also New Mobility's Person of the Year for this for his amazing work that he does in this area of inclusive travel. And he's also traveled all over the world consulting with travel agents and tour operators. And he's a former social activist, which we're going to get some information on, which I find interesting. He also, too, was a resident scholar at the University of California at Santa Cruz in 2004 and 2005. And he's a writer. So, you know, I write for New Mobility Magazine. He's also appeared in that magazine as a writer. And he's been published in Emerging Horizons, Contours, Accessible Portugal, Audacity, Travel and Transitions, E-Tour Brazil, Turismo Bolivia. I can't pronounce all of these. But he's been published in a lot of places. And one of the main things, though, that you might know him for is his blog, Rolling Rains, and it's been around since 2004. It's a pretty long time for a blog nowadays, and it's a really great site. It's got a lot of information on basically exploring the adoption of universal design by the tourism industry, and it's kind of a lot of words there, but basically it's about making travel accessible all around the world, and this is what he's basically lives for now. So without further ado, welcome Scott Rains to the show.
Thank you, Tiffany. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh, man. It's super nice to meet you. And you're out in California, right?
I am. I live in Silicon Valley.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Are you born and raised in that area?
Well, sort of in that area. Literally, I was born in Chicago, but when I was four, my father moved to Seattle to work for Boeing. So I grew up in Seattle.
Okay.
And I've been here about 25 years now.
25 years. So you're definitely a Pacific Coast guy. That's awesome. And, you know, I find that I would love to one day travel to Seattle in more in depth. I've been there, oh gosh, a long time ago, about 10 years ago. And I really love the area. I love the weather. And I bet Silicon Valley is just great, too, for someone in your situation.
It really is. And in fact, that's one of the reasons that I sort of set my sights on moving down here. You know how it is. Bodies that we have.
Yeah, I know.
They sort of react to the weather really differently, or pressure, or whatever it happens to be, air pressure even. And I just would find that I'm a C34 incomplete.
Okay.
And so I would find that my hands would freeze up, and I just kind of couldn't do the stuff that I needed to do. You know, like fixing my belt and stuff.
Oh, gosh, I know. My hands, I live in Minneapolis, and it gets cold, too, and you have to wait.
I went to school at St. John's up the road a little bit.
Oh, you went to St. John's or St. Joe's?
No, St. John's. I was a graduate student there in theology.
Wow, that's
several
where.
Summers.
Oh, I didn't know that's where you studied theology. That's what your doctorate's in that, right?
Yeah, that's right. I have a doctorate in pastoral ministry, which is sort of applied theology.
Oh my gosh! So, how long did you have to stay in Minnesota for that degree?
I did. I think it was 5 summers that I was up at St. John's, and that was kind of at the master's level. And then I went on and I did a little coursework at Oxford and some independent work. I did a project that is now a DVD published by the publishing house up at St. John's.
Are you kidding me? I went to Augsburg College. That's where I graduated from.
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. That's where I graduated from there in 2001. So it's so cool that you came here. What'd you think? So obviously, you know, you haven't come back in a while, though. You're traveling all around the world.
Well, I am. Yeah, you know, I try to get back whenever I can. I've got friends there, and I've done some work with Landscape Structures Incorporated, which is up Eden Prairie. I don't know exactly where it is, but it's up that way.
Hi. That's so great. You're so connected. And, you know, I was talking, I work with easystand.com, and I was telling, you know, and they sponsored this podcast, and they were like, oh, they're so excited that I was having you on the show because they've spoken with you as well in the past. And
exactly. In fact, you know, they're kind of my evening date when Patricia and I get together to watch a DVD or something like that. I'm usually kind of either sitting on the couch with her or standing in my easystand.
Really? That is so awesome that you do that. It takes a lot of extra work to kind of wherewithal to make sure you get that standing frame time in, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Right. Well, I am so excited to kind of get to know really how you became an inclusive travel expert. And you have an amazing story. I was doing a bunch of research on you here this afternoon, and I kind of knew about you a little bit, but you know, you've kind of become the go-to guy for inclusive travel. And gosh, when would you say you've become kind of like the go-to expert? When did this all happen for you?
Well, really, I started around about the turn of the century. I can say that.
Yeah.
My wife and I were on an anniversary, and mm-hmm. we like to do road trips. Well, we like to travel. in the car together, where we were just driving around Laughlin and Shasta and a few places up north. Mm-hmm. And we kept on saying, well, you know, there's not going to be any miracle. We're going to get older, and my disability is going to get more pronounced. And she's going to develop, you know, the things that happen when you get older.
Yep.
So what do we like to do, and what can we sustain in the future? Well, mm-hmm. we like to travel, and we like to write, mm-hmm. and we see ourselves doing that. And then we get to talking about, well, you know, what about doing some writing about traveling? And mm-hmm. if it's going to be about traveling, it's going to be about disability.
Right.
And I sort of pursued that dream. She took the more sensible route and you know, chose a career that actually pays something. and so I consider what I'm doing to be purely selfish.
Okay.
You know, most people think, oh, you get the free trips, you know, and you get to stay in the 5-star hotels in New Delhi and, you know, Paris and whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no. That doesn't work.
So you're not staying in fancy places.
Oh, I am staying in fancy places, and that still works. You know, and then you have to document to them and explain to them endlessly, you know, why it isn't accessible. Or please help me get off the floor because the accessible toilet seat that you bought from Germany is a bad design and the screws broke and it fell and now I'm on the floor in the bathroom and I can't.
So you're basically thanking them for their free hospitality by telling them why how everything needs to be improved upon. But they need that, though. I mean, there's not many people doing what you do, right?
Well, there are some people who are doing it really well.
Okay.
And there are some people who think of it, you know, kind of like, oh, this would be a good scam, right? You know, I'm in a wheelchair, I'm blind, I can tell them anything I want. Then we're sort of slowly but surely weeding that group out. And, you know, our checks and balances, you know, we publish, we put ourselves out there, you know, for years like I have.
Yeah.
2004, mm-hmm. And you know, if we weren't responsible, we would hear about it right away.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, kind of get back to your question.
Yes.
I really started out flying under the radar.
Okay. Yeah.
I waited a while before I put my blog up. I started by working with travel agents.
Okay.
And I actually am a travel agent, although I don't book travel.
Okay.
But that's, you know, I'm a card carrying travel agent, you might say.
You started out as a travel agent in your early.
Well, and I started that out in order to, as a way of doing research.
Okay.
You know, learning the process of booking through all the professional tools and being on the mailing list for the professional associations and the, you know, what all the deals are and the familiarization tours, the FAMs,
mm-hmm.
Talking to travel agents and finding out what kind of situations they run into, what kind of services they need, and, mm-hmm. and really who delivers in terms of, you know, the people who say that they're doing travel that's accessible or, you know, providing services or products.
Well, it's always different, you know. What, you know, that's the thing when you travel is people's version of accessible. You know, as a wheelchair user, you go to Mexico and they say they're, you know, whatever rooms wheelchair accessible, and of course you show up and it's not, and you know, everyone's always told as a wheelchair user when they're traveling, make sure you call ahead. And you know, I know that you love to travel and you've always loved to travel. In the first 3 months after you got injured, you kind of started thinking about that. And, you know, it's for people listening out there. What would you say, you know, this is going to, what's the, some of the first things people should maybe think about if they're planning on traveling somewhere? I mean, some basic stuff, just who should they always call ahead to make sure, that kind of thing? What questions should they ask?
Absolutely. You should always call ahead. And here's the thing. You shouldn't assume that because you called ahead, you resolved anything whatsoever.
Yeah.
The way to look at this is to think like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going out to have a good time, but I'm also going out carrying the banner, carrying the backpack
mm-hmm.
for the next generation. I may be the first person with my particular disability going to this place. It might be a totally new Marriott development and they've done everything according to ADA or whatever, DDA, depending on what country you're in, or no laws whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's just a little something that they could tweak, whether it's in their service or in, you know, the placement of the furniture or whatever.
Yeah.
But the point is, you may actually book your flight and they might have the right code in the computer, and when it gets down to it, you know, everybody's understaffed and they just drop the ball somehow.
Yeah.
And you have to be ready to start from, you know, point number one, as if you hadn't said this before, and tell the person that's right in front of you succinctly what it is that you need.
Yep.
And then there's always the option later on, after you've made sure that you're safe and, you know, they did it right and didn't drop you.
Yeah.
There's always the option to go and complain.
Yeah.
Or to write up, you know, something that goes point to point and tells them, you know, where they need the training. You can do that as discreetly or as publicly as you need to.
Well, you know, I did do that. I was on a cruise about 10 years ago and it was not accessible. And I wrote a letter to the cruise line and I didn't really get much of a response other than they apologized and that was about it. It was Carnival. But at least I felt better about writing the letter, you know.
Well, and cumulatively, it has its impact. Yeah. You don't always hear back from the person, and certainly they're going to give you some sort of a form letter.
Mm-hmm.
I was flying with Judy Heumann, who is President Obama's appointee in the State Department on issues of international disability. And we were both down in Ecuador. I was down there doing some work for the government. Well, actually, we both were.
Cool.
At a conference. And we happened to be flying back together right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing was that the person from American Airlines tagged our wheelchairs incorrectly down in Quito.
Mm-hmm.
And as he was doing it, I was telling him that it was wrong. And I told him repeatedly that it was wrong. anyway.
Oh, my gosh.
At the other end of the room, Judy was doing the same thing. So when we got to the United States, our wheelchairs were impounded by customs, and they wouldn't let them through. And it's like, we had the State Department on the line.
Oh, my gosh.
They would not let us through. So I tell that story because it happens to everybody. It happens if you've got the president breathing down.
All
we can do there is just, argue with the pilot until he threatens to throw you off the plane.
That's crazy. That's crazy that happened. And I, first of all, I think it's so awesome that you get to travel the way you do. I mean, you've pretty much been in every continent, I'm going to guess, except what? Antarctica or something?
Exactly. I'm trying to get a friend to take me there.
Well, no wonder. They probably offer some accessible Antarctic cruises or something, don't they?
I don't know of any that are accessible. But there may be.
Okay.
I don't know for sure.
Well, let's start from, I was wondering, how did you get injured? And I finally found a little tidbit of how you were injured. You were sharing it with in the YouTube video. And you were injured back when you were, what, 17 or 18?
I was 17.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I actually, one way to tell the story is that it was elective surgery that they told me beforehand that when I came out from it, I would be paralyzed.
Okay.
What it was is... At about 12 years old, I kind of began to get a diagnosis at 13.
Yeah.
I started losing my left arm. Yeah. And what that was a tumor in my spine, about C3 and 4.
Wow.
A slipped brain tumor. Usually it's a very aggressive brain tumor. In this case, it was it grew a little bit more slowly and was going down away from my brain.
Wow, okay.
But at 17, they went in and they did a biopsy. But the only thing was they said, because of where this is, we're going to have to lift up your spinal cord, which will bruise it, and the bruising will then cause damage to your spinal cord. Plus, we're going to cut out a little piece of it, which is wrapped around the spine.
Uh-huh.
So they basically convinced me that we needed to do that.
Wow.
So I'm paralyzed because of an operation, but because we needed to figure out that we actually did not have any kind of chemotherapy that was going to do anything at all.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy. Yeah, that's one of the first. That's a very unique story of becoming paralyzed, I have to say.
Yeah.
Well, how did you know? You seem obviously you've been paralyzed for quite a long time since the early 70s, and you're very well adjusted. But, I love to ask people that have been paralyzed for as long as they have, and that are doing so many awesome things. Like, what kind of tips? Adjusting in the beginning is not easy, and. How did you kind of find, a place for you in the world after you left rehab?
That's a really good question. For a long time, I struggled and flopped around.
Mm-hmm.
My first girlfriend out of rehab turned out to be the receptionist at rehab.
That's awesome.
a little bit, accidental, sort of. But that made for and experienced and whatever. So that was good, and I was
That's
just
really
getting out of high school. My friends from high school were still really tight with me,
Yeah.
and I went to college at the University of Washington,
Okay.
so I wasn't too far from home, so I had some support.
Yeah.
And I just decided that, well, even before that, I decided that I was really good in languages, and I was just going to pursue my passion while
Yeah.
my brain was still young and flexible.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that led naturally into an interest in international things.
Right. I love that you're so good at languages. And are you part Brazilian? Is that why you speak it so well?
No, actually, I had been an exchange student the summer before I was paralyzed
Oh, okay.
in Brazil, and the summer before that in Guatemala.
Oh, so you do speak Brazilian and Spanish fluently, or just Brazilian?
Probably it would be a stretch to say,
Fluently.
say fluent.
Okay.
But I manage in Portuguese in particular.
That is so cool. I have a minor in Spanish, and I've always wanted to learn Portuguese, but they're not that similar, even though they seem sort of, but they're really not.
It's easier for someone who speaks Portuguese to understand someone who speaks Spanish than it is the other way around.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Spanish, I mean, Portuguese sort of sounds like French and Arabic mixed with Italian to somebody who's speaking Spanish.
It's beautiful, though. I will say that. It's beautiful. Okay, and your level of injury, you push yourself around, though, right?
I do, yeah. I'm functionally a para.
Okay.
I have a power chair, but it's so difficult to transport it and
Right.
everything that I most of the time
So your hands work completely normal, basically.
No, 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 no.
No, they don't. Okay.
No.
So you're from the photos, I would be surprised. You look pretty able in your hands, so that's awesome. So I was just, the question, are you able to take care of yourself on your travels and all that stuff, because for someone in my situation, I always got to bring a caregiver with.
Well, now that I'm at the upper end of 50,
Yeah.
I pretty much always take a caregiver along with
Oh,
me.
you do? Okay.
Yeah. I can travel
Yeah.
alone,
That's good.
and sometimes I'll do that.
Yeah.
But it's more and more dicey. It's just uncomfortable.
Who do you take with? Have you found PCAs that are willing to travel?
Yeah. So I've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
And basically what I do is I know a lot of people. I know a
Okay.
lot of people who have professional interests
Yeah.
or starting businesses or have done me a favor or whatever.
Okay.
And I will ask them if they would like to come along with me.
Okay, I love that.
And sometimes it's just for a free trip.
Okay.
Sometimes there's some money involved.
Okay.
Sometimes, they have to, pay. They have to assume some costs.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I know. If I brought a PCA with me on a trip, I'd want to pay for a portion of it, but I don't, but it's hard to figure out what you should do in that situation. I don't know.
Well, what I do as a professional, I will tell the person that I'm contracted with that I travel with a PCA,
Yeah.
and that I ask that they consider the cost of the PCA to be a part of my professional fees.
Okay, that's awesome. That's really good that you can do that. Wow. So, all right. So now I don't even know where to begin. I have this really awesome question, and I read this quote by you, and I thought, I was going to ask, what countries do you like the most, or which ones are the most accessible, and which ones were not, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw this quote that you wrote about South, you're talking about how Japan and South America are both becoming more inclusive, but for different reasons. Like, Japan's becoming more inclusive because they're realizing their population is aging, so it's more of a practical thing. But you were saying how the South American culture, they tend to have a more Marxist kind of a focus, and they actually just have a real heart for people with disabilities and just believe they should be included because that's what should be done. And I think that with your ability to kind of, you get to see all different types of cultures, and just kind of tell us a little bit about this. This is really interesting to me.
Well, sure. Well, I like the way that you introduced me. You said that I talk about inclusive tourism.
Yeah.
I never talk about accessible tourism. I never talk about adapted tourism. Because I want to make a point. Good tourism is something that incorporates universal design. And universal design is designing for the widest range of people under the widest range of conditions. And what that means is it stretches the definition or redefines what's normal.
Okay.
Difference is normal. Disability is normal. Statistically, we're there. That means we're in the norm, right? right?
Yep.
List. And so the social model of disability says that we're not a medical problem, we're not a charity case, and we're not, you know, we didn't sin, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We are, there is a mismatch between our physical ability and the environment. And when the environment is built, that's an ethical question.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so the ethics are you going to build us in or are you going to build us out?
Mm.
That's what inclusive tourism asks, is what is so significant, what is so exceptional mm-hmm. about this case, this hotel, this airplane, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that it justifies excluding some people.
Right. I see what you're saying.
So you turn it upside down like that. So, for example, in Japan, they've been motivated by a real respect for teachers, for elders.
Okay.
And really early on, long before anybody else in the world was getting it, they understood what's called the population inversion.
Mm.
The graphics of the population used to be, you know, grandma, grandpa up on top of the pyramid, you know,
yep.
in terms of numbers, and then, you know, there's mom and dad, and then there's, you know, the kids, and then there's the babies,
mm-hmm.
and this pyramid goes with a larger base,
mm-hmm.
And the base is the younger people.
Okay.
What's happening in the world is it's doing the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
There's a small point at the bottom that's a not growing amount of young people, and a large base of a large apex,
right.
of boomers.
Mm-hmm.
And the Japanese figured that out. And so they've taken a city, I think it's the seventh largest city in Japan, called Takayama.
Okay.
It's a place where older people tend to go because they've preserved their older traditions
oh.
and their older architecture.
Okay.
And with keeping the still the same spirit, architectural spirit,
mm-hmm.
they've incorporated all sorts of things involving universal design.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's followed through several administrations, you know, of their government,
oh.
and has become a tourist spot.
Oh my gosh.
That is accessible in the country.
That's awesome.
Now, in Brazil, where the population is much younger,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole big emphasis on adventure tourism.
Okay.
So zip lines and surfing.
Yes.
Whitewater rafting and all that sort of a thing. Or in Ecuador, where the government is much more socialist,
mm-hmm.
there was a huge push, and that's why Judy and I were down there for a conference put on by the World Bank,
mm-hmm.
a huge push to first do an assessment, to do a census and an assessment
okay.
of the health of every single person with a disability in the country.
You helped with that?
I did not help with that.
Okay.
I just spoke at the conference.
That's great.
I'm helping them set up inclusive tourism in their country
okay.
on a national level.
That's great.
But first what they did was look and did an assessment of the health of people, got them the rehabilitation equipment, bringing hospital beds out into the hills and the jungle.
Wow.
On the backs of donkeys or in military helicopters. Very impressive work.
Wow. I can't believe they did that, really.
I don't know if anybody else has done that.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Ecuador. Wow.
Yeah.
Love it.
And so Lenin mm-hmm. Moreno, who is the vice president, who is a wheelchair user,
yeah.
Was behind this project, and
wow.
we nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize this last year. He
wow.
he didn't get it.
Wow.
But
maybe he get nominated again, though, or no?
I suppose he could. He stepped out of government now to do some other work.
He did?
Who knows what will happen.
I thought he was president now. He's not?
No, he stepped out it was taking a toll on his body.
Oh, that's too bad. When did that happen?
Well, he's in the process.
Oh, he's in the process.
Yeah.
Have you met him personally?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow. That must have been really awesome.
It was. And he invited me and my wife down this last September to do some more work. And when I told him, well, probably not, he threw in, well, me and my wife will head over to the Galapagos with you. And I said, well, probably not. And kind of looked at me and I said, look, this is my anniversary. September, and I promised Patricia that I would do no work travel. I love your country and all, but I'm not working during September.
Oh my gosh. That is awesome that you know him. you know, I love, I was just, I've really written blogs about him. It's really cool to actually talk to someone that's met him. What's he like in person? Is he pretty, like, reserved, or is he...
Well, he's got the reserve, the gravitas of somebody who, you know, knows that they're important. You know, he's written books on humor.
Oh, I know that. I saw he loves humor, right? He lives by humor. I think that is awesome. What he is, for people listening, he, at post-injury, he basically... It's taking humor. It's like his torch. He believes that's like the greatest thing for people to heal, right? Or one of them. Which I actually believe, I mean, it's helped me a lot as well in these years. So that's awesome. Wow. So, okay. Now let's talk about countries that you visited that were kind of, let's say, shockingly inaccessible. Like maybe you were going there expecting something better and it was just pretty much... They're far from being, you know, where they need to be at.
Sure. Well,
or currently even. Yeah.
You know, you could say that all of Europe is like that.
Okay.
In that they have, you know, progressive, forward-thinking governments. They have really active disability rights movements. They have laws. They have access to technology. But they have a tradition of thousands of years.
Yeah.
Architecture.
Yeah.
And so, not only do you have cobblestones, but you have narrow doors that are, you know, made out of stone.
Right, right.
Not a lot you can do in a lot of cases.
Yep, I know. And that's why you see some really cool mobility devices coming out of Europe to kind of, to make up for these architectural barriers.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know. But they're trying, though. You know, what was the DDA acronym or that you used earlier that's kind of equal to the ADA here, sort of? Or...
Yeah, Disability Discrimination Act.
Okay, what is
out
that?
Of the UK, and it's called, they use the same phrase in Australia.
Oh, okay.
So throughout Europe, in also the pan-European legislation, there are rights, you know, for all the countries.
Yeah.
But in England, their particular legislation, the Disability Discrimination Act, has kicked into full force just recently.
Okay.
And so there's been a lot of remodeling of train stations.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, procedures for getting on and off of trains,
yep.
off of buses. A lot of stuff was being done, and more importantly, being watched very closely prior to the London Olympics.
Right, I was going to ask about that. I mean, London is probably, you were in London obviously before and after. I mean, is it really that improved because of the Paralympics?
I have not been there after.
Oh, you haven't? Okay.
But from what people are telling me, yes, there are improvements. And then the question becomes, will they be maintained?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, that's the problem everywhere.
Yeah.
But there was an interesting study that showed that as a result of the Paralympics, 86% of the adults in, I think it was Britain and Wales, I think, that they surveyed, 86% said that their attitudes towards people with disabilities was impacted positively.
Really?
And the children, they didn't do a study, but what people are telling me is the children, after getting a chance to play some of the sports like goalball and whatever that are adapted for people with disabilities or you know, invented around people with disabilities, they were having trouble deciding, you know, whether an Olympic athlete or a Paralympic athlete was their most favorite.
That's awesome.
They were you know, tying. Tying cardboard on their legs to simulate a disability.
Wow, that is crazy. Well, you know, kids are very moldable and very just, you know, I love kids. And, you know, that's awesome to hear. And speaking of, you know, the Paralympics and sports in general, you were hired by the government of South Africa to help them in preparation for the World Cup that was there, right?
That's right. There were three different states that brought me in. To analyze, to you know, do this smorgasbord.
Yeah, like what exactly did you do? What, like, they wanted, basically in layman's terms, they want to make they want people coming there traveling who have disabilities there for the World Cup to feel like they're welcome in the country, basically, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So in this case, I wasn't actually going and doing the stadiums. There were three guys who are all quads and all architects who were advising the government on that.
Wow, cool.
And appears to have done well, and maybe Port Elizabeth and a few other places worked out really well. The stadiums, you know, kind of hit and miss with some compromises, but in general, worked pretty well. I was actually brought in specifically to look at the tourist offerings.
Okay.
So I started out in Durban.
Mm.
I traveled with a group called Access to Africa Safaris.
Cool.
Janae Bezuidenhut is the one who owns this. Janae is hard of hearing.
Okay.
And is quadriplegic and with his mouth. And she developed a tour from Durban up what's called the Elephant Coast up towards Mozambique.
Okay.
To I think it's the second largest, or certainly one of the largest and most unique wildlife reserves called Shushui.
Ooh, pretty.
And we were there, you know, we ran into the typical, you know, midday traffic jams, you know, with rhinoceros in the road. You can get past to see the elephants a little bit further down until the rhinoceros were gone. and they have a little tradition where you want to see the big five, which are the five big game.
Yes, of course, everyone wants to see that when they're paying for
it. I was able to do that at Shushui in, I think, before noon.
That's pretty awesome.
And then we went to the Kruger in a different state. We went to Johannesburg.
Okay.
And Pretoria and saw the government building and whatever.
Yeah.
Buildings. And went up towards the border with Mozambique.
Okay.
And saw what they call the Kruger or Kruger National Park.
Okay.
And there I'd been in touch with a guy who's a paraplegic and works for the South African National Park System and was traveling around. We were in cabins and testing out the safari vehicles and the ability of the rooms and all that. And then I went to Cape Town where I was able to go out on a boat and travel around town. I actually got a really nice tour into I want to say favelas, but the townships.
Okay.
And was able to see, you know, what kind of development was going on there. I was able to meet with some activists. So this actually was in Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
Able to meet with some activists. And my tour guide that was provided to me by the state was actually someone who was a leader in the anti-apartheid movement.
Oh my gosh, how fascinating.
Yeah, it was.
Wow, that's great. You know, that's, you know, what I'm jealous. You know, the great thing about traveling, you know, you meet the people you meet when you travel. I mean, that's everything, isn't it?
It is. You really do become an ambassador. It's a cliche, but you really do become an ambassador, and you bring back things that put you really light years ahead of your own country.
Yeah.
One of the things that people ask me is, oh, you've been around for, you know, more than 40 years in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
What, you know, you must be able to teach them a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I can.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The ideas and the strategies and the things that we used were at a different time and with different resources.
Right.
Whatever. And there's a whole lot of good thinking going on other places in the world that, you know, we're not paying attention to here.
I know. We have this problem in the United States where we think we're the center of the universe, and that's so not the case. It kind of bugs me. Yeah. And, you know, this brings me to, I want to talk about, we only have about 10 minutes left here, but I wanted to quick talk about just your work in Brazil right now, and you're kind of doing the same thing in Brazil because they're having the World Cup there this year, right?
They're having the Confederations Cup.
Okay.
Which is the qualifier. And
the FIFA Cup.
Next year is the World Cup.
Okay.
And 2 years later is 2016. Is the Olympics and the Paralympics.
Holy moly, yeah. You're going to be in Brazil for a few years to come, sounds like.
Well, that's what I hope. What I'm telling them is, look, you've got 12 cities that are going to host the World Cup 2014.
So,
and, you know, a good portion of those are going to be hosting games during the Confederations Cup this year as well, you know, in the qualifiers.
I love that.
So you are not necessarily going to be getting the tourists from Rio, because that's where the headquarters of the Olympics are going to be, and there's going to be more people who are going to come to the Olympics than to the World Cup.
Right.
But you can build a name for yourself by doing it right in terms of the accessibility of the Confederations Cup this year and the World Cup next year.
I love that.
And people, when they make the trip all the way to Brazil, are not going to want to just pop in for, you know, cycling.
Oh, no.
Go back home. They're going to want to get to know the country.
Exactly.
So this is a huge marketing campaign. Because as people with disabilities, we have different things that we look for.
Exactly.
And there's nowhere in the world on their websites or in their brochures or whatever that puts in the kind of information that we need in order to feel secure about traveling somewhere or staying somewhere.
No, you're right.
So we depend on word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm telling them is, look, I'm going to be watching you. I'm going to be writing about you. I'm going to be here traveling around inspecting.
I love it.
And I'm going to get the word out, and that's your word of mouth. That's gold to you. But be smart. Do it right now, and then get the spillover tourists from Rio, you know, between or before or after, you know, the Olympics or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think that's exciting. I'm really excited for the country. And I recently read you mentioned ziplining at the top of the show. Have you tried that yet, accessible ziplining in Brazil?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there's a wonderful place. It's about 2 hours south of the city of São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the state of São Paulo and in the state of Minas Gerais, which is bordering. So, like, in fact, the main building is in Minas Gerais on one side of the river, and then the zip line, this big zip line that's 1 kilometer long.
Wow.
starts in the state of São Paulo on top of a hill. about a 900-foot drop.
Oh, my God. That sounds so scary. How would someone with no torso control do a zip line?
Well, a friend of mine has Frederick's ataxia. Mm-hmm. So he has a lot of spasticity and he developed a modified hang glider seat.
Okay.
This zip line has 2 cables, so it's a really stable environment. And what happens is you get strapped into this, you know, sort of like diaper-like thing. You
right.
This sort of.
I've seen the videos.
Yeah, I've got some videos. Yeah. And you just zip along for
Wow.
A whole minute.
That would be just a great experience. Talk about getting out of your wheelchair and just feeling free again. Like, I know, I like the idea of ziplining a little bit better than, like, paragliding or parasailing because it's a bit more contained. It's on a line, you know what I mean? So before we end this conversation, and we didn't have too much time to talk about your early years, but what was the social activism you did in your 70s and 80s? I'm just curious.
Well, I did a lot of work in the peace movement.
Oh.
I actually did an internship with Zuki's Peace Council.
Okay.
I was part of a Catholic group called Pax Christi.
Okay.
I hosted a peace activist who came over from Sweden and did some peace demonstrations and whatever here in the United States.
I love that. You know, you have a very good energy about you, Scott, and I bet you that conveys well when you travel, right?
Yeah, that's what people tell me.
I can feel it already, you know, and I think that's great, you know, because when you're traveling and you're an American, and do you feel like people have these certain, like, oh, man, he's going to be kind of a typical American, and then they meet you, and they're like, oh, you changed my mind or anything?
Yeah.
You get that a lot?
I actually had the chance to go to my grandparents' country, to Slovakia.
Now, where exactly is Slovakia? Because I'm kind of feeling stupid right now.
Okay, well, it used to be called Czechoslovakia.
Okay.
So it's close to Germany. It actually has a border with Austria.
Okay.
On another side is Hungary. So it's Eastern Europe.
Awesome. And that was how many years ago, sorry?
Well, I'm pretty sure it was about 2005.
Wow. And that was the experience. Did your wife still travel with you most of the time or no?
No. Patricia's really smart. Okay. She went to Harvard, Stanford, and she knows when it's not a good deal. She doesn't want to schlep my pack around.
Okay.
She doesn't want to be, you know, the pretty wife in the background on television or whatever.
Okay.
So when we travel alone. That's the story about, you know, turning down to Ecuador.
So you make sure when you guys travel that it's actually an enjoyable vacation and that's all. Yeah.
There's a huge difference between traveling, the traveling that I usually do, and the vacation. Now, I know that some of my PA be listening, and it is not that they're not wonderful to travel with, but they know beforehand that we're all working.
You know, no one's the perfect travel mate, you know, but the thing is, at least they're there to help you, and you know, and that's really what's the most important, so.
It's really important who you pick for your travel partner.
Yeah.
And, in fact, I think the very first article I wrote was about that, you know, or included that information.
Totally.
It's like a marriage, you know? You really are intimate, whether that's physically intimate or just, you know, stuck in a
right.
cabin of a bus. Together. And the little things get on your nerves. And so if you develop ways to communicate and to have fun and to know when enough is enough and say, you know, okay, get lost, you know, I can take it myself for a while.
You know, important. Yeah, you can like sit together in a train for like 6 hours and not talk to each other. And it doesn't feel awkward because, you know, and you kind of need that rapport between one another, right? So what's the 2013 looking like for you, you know, and so we can kind of keep tabs on what you're doing in rollingrains.com and all that jazz.
Well, I have a proposal in right now that could keep me in Brazil for a couple months.
All right.
And talking about another one that would might extend that another month or so.
Okay.
I will be going to Ecuador again. I frequently go to Italy with the Carlo Busta Institute, which is a national neurological institute.
Okay, cool.
And those things sort of pop up on the spur, so I may end up back in Italy again.
Oh.
But other than that, you know, I'm open.
You're open. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So, and on your website, just a little promotion for your website. You know, you're really active blogging this year, especially. You know, what is a taste of some of the blog posts people can find on your website? What if someone like visited your website, what would be some of the stuff they'd find, I guess?
Well, right now I've got two. I've got one that's entirely in Portuguese, or almost entirely.
That's awesome.
It's called Rio 2016.
Okay.
So, that's just all about what we hope to leave as a legacy after the Olympics.
Love it.
But my regular website or my regular blog is rollingrange.com.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there you'll find a mix of things that would include things like events that are happening, conferences related to tourism and disability or universal design, studies that are going on. There's always somebody who's doing a study looking at what was your travel experience here.
I know. There's a lot of going on. A lot of people maybe don't realize that inclusive travel, there's a lot of stuff happening. I didn't realize that. It's really cool.
We've been able to pull together and kind of nurture individuals who are interested and then help them form organizations. So there's European Network for Accessible Tourism.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group that's starting in South America. There's, I'm actually helping out something a group called Disabled Peoples International now on travel and accessibility.
Is there a travel website you would recommend, just to kind of a general for people with disabilities to kind of a starting point?
Well, you know, really, there's an author that I just really admire.
Yeah.
Her name is Candy Harrington.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of her. Yeah.
And Candy does a website and a blog called New Horizons, but she also has a large number of books now on travel to bed and breakfast or just
awesome.
Traveling with a disability. And then also Liz Hamill, who's a neighbor of mine, has written several just straight travel guides.
Liz Hamill, okay.
I think it's Moon Publishing is what she publishes the travel guides for.
Okay.
But she has a blog called Travel with Pain.
Travel. Oh, cool. So it's just kind of her adventures or advice or everything?
Well, it's a mix. It tends more to be travelogues with her advice.
Okay.
Interspersed in there.
Nice, nice. Awesome. Travelingwithpain.com. And Candy Harrington's book is called what again?
Well, Candy Harrington's magazine is called New Horizons.
New Horizons, okay. And they can...
Emerging Horizons.
All right, I'll find the link and post it on this blog post as well, so people can more easily access it. So, but anyways, we are out of time, Scott, and I just want to thank you again. you're really a fountain of information here. I could talk to you for probably for another few hours here on more specific travel advice in particular cities, but maybe we'll have you on again for that, perhaps. So.
Or maybe we'll just take a trip to Brazil sometime.
Or maybe that as well, and then we can talk about how much fun we had in Brazil.
Good. Well, Tiffany, it was great talking to you.
Great talking to you as well, Scott. Have a great night, okay?